Wake up weekday mornings, LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. Traffic and weather every 10 minutes on the fives. And A Better Life with Dr. Sanjay Gupta on Suffolk County's news and information leader, 1039 LI News Radio.
Well, you're ready for a little off the record. Off the record, on the record, that is. That's right. Joseph Nicholas Campola, managing partner, Campola, Middleton, and McCormick in his usual spot. Joe, of course, does that great blog Off the Record, and we bring it to life right here on the air, on the record. Mr. Campolo, a pleasure. How's your summer going?
You sound like you got a lot of energy this morning, man. I love that. A
ton of energy. I tell you one thing, I wasn't feeling that great a little before 6 o'clock, but I tell you, leave it to Rob Trotter to get me rolling here.
Rob will get anybody's blood going, man.
He got my blood going, and even prior to that, talking about that New York American Water saga with Delia Dree Whitten in Nassau. I tell you, we have really had a couple of good topics here. You watching any of this World Cup stuff?
Yeah, I've become obsessed with the World Cup. I don't know why, I just have. It's been really, really interesting stuff, really fun to watch.
You know, I was hoping for France-England. I tell you, these matches. Now, I'm not a big soccer guy, okay? I mean, I could care less what happens, you know, with the MLS. I couldn't even tell you one guy on the New York team, okay? I couldn't tell you. But I'll tell you this much. This is the big stage right here. Big stage. Disappointed the U.S. couldn't field the team here, Joe. But I have watched, you know, these matches have been incredible down the stretch. You know, the kicks and the shootouts and everything, the extra time. You know, I'm still trying to kind of wrap myself around the rules. You know, my kids are telling me, you know, some of the rules as we go along here, you know, as far as substitutions, which sometimes they don't make sense to me. But I love the excitement. What happened yesterday with Croatia, who would have thunk that, huh?
Yeah, it was crazy. And I'm with you. I was hoping for an England win. I mean, they haven't been in the finals, I think, since the 60s. And with everything going on over there and with the tensions and Trump over there, I think it would have just been great for England to have had a win and go to the finals. But Croatia played a better game, so they're in.
No question about it. And you're not a big – are you a big soccer guy, like, throughout the year? Do you turn – you flip the channels? Do you turn on a league?
It's all of a sudden just happened with this World Cup. I started watching it and then all of a sudden got obsessed with it. I don't know why. It just happened this year.
I still get a kick out of the fact when anybody appears to be injured, okay, and they're kind of breathing in pain and whatnot, we see it, and then all of a sudden, you know, when they don't get the flag or whatever, they're up and running again. So there's
a
lot of flopping going on over there in Moscow these days. But it's I tell you, it's been a great tournament. It really has. I've really gotten into this, no question. Let's get to some other things. Obviously, big pick by the president. You know, prime time once again, Joe, the other night. And I'll tell you this, I was looking for a little Ryan Seacrest and red carpet interviews prior to the announcement of Brett Kavanaugh as Supreme Court Justice. You know, this president likes the prime time. We saw it in Singapore back on June the 12th. You know, the summit and everything else with Kim Jong-un and everything. Same type of deal, Brett Kavanaugh there. Your assessment of this whole thing?
Yeah, first of all, high drama, right? High drama with the prime time announcement and pick. Really, I thought... You know, I didn't know anything about Brett Kavanaugh before that. I thought he played it absolutely perfectly. Even Trump was on his best behavior and didn't stray from the teleprompter. And what an interesting development! I mean, you talk about how things have played out and how Hillary Clinton must be feeling right now, knowing she could have at least had two picks on a Supreme Court. But I'll tell you, Jay, you and I talked about this when Neil Gorsuch was nominated, and we talked and we agreed, you know, the Democratic Senate overplayed their hand with Gorsuch. He was replacing Justice Scalia. It was a dollar-for-dollar swap. They should have been low-key about it and bit the bullet on that one, because we knew that there was going to be another pick coming down the pike. And here it is. And because they overplayed their hand, the Dems, which forced the Republicans to get rid of the 60-vote requirement, you're now faced with all of a sudden a swing vote where the Republicans still have the majority in the Senate. And I think he's going to be confirmed. I think Trump did a very smart thing by picking Kavanaugh. I think Kavanaugh is akin to Chief Justice Roberts. I think he's a, you know, he's a very careful judge that's looking to do very big things on the Supreme Court. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult. I believe he's going to be confirmed. I don't see how people are going to vote against him on the Republican camp. So Trump did a smart thing by picking him.
And I'll tell you this, Joe, and listen, I don't want to hear Schumer anymore. Listen, Democrats had their chance way back. You go back to the days of Merrick Garland. I mean, let's face it. You know, that whole thing was blown up. So I don't want to hear about, you know, well, you know, we got to block the pick, do everything we can. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to see Bernie Sanders. I don't want to see Kirsten Gillibrand on this. You know, they had their chance with Merrick Garland way back. I mean, let's face it. You know, this thing has become as divisive as could be at this point in time. And they had an opportunity going back to the Obama days.
You know, the old adage that resistance of someone is not moving your own plan forward is very appropriate here. I'm very disappointed with how Chuck Schumer is leading the Senate. There is no plan coming out of that Senate that the Democrats have in any sort of cohesive manner. And they have midterm elections coming up, and their only platform is resist Trump, resist Trump, resist Trump. You know, they have absolutely no plan, and I'm shocked by it, to be honest with you. I'm absolutely shocked that they just haven't come up with alternative plans, which would be, I think, a much more productive use of their time, and they just keep banging on the table. They don't have the numbers. So their entire strategy should have been, how do they get the numbers back in the midterm elections? And they've been playing this resist Trump game, which I haven't agreed with, and Trump's popularity is going up in the interim. And, you know, they have a quandary right now. The Democrats have a real quandary right now insofar as there are, you know, Democrats that are in states where Trump carried large numbers who are going to be forced to the test with this Supreme Court pick. And Schumer has to make a decision now of, you know, do I resist everything on this pick and maybe even lose more Democratic seats in the future, which would be devastating, because if Trump gets more Republican senators out of those states, which are going to be more conservative than the moderate Dems that are in there now, his next Supreme Court picks can be even more further to the right. I mean, he's getting a lot of flack right now on Kavanaugh because, you know, hardcore conservatives are saying Kavanaugh's not even conservative enough. If he gets 60, 61 votes in the Senate, and some of these senators are from states where there's deep conservative values, you know, he may get two more picks and could really alter things. So I think Chuck Schumer really has to sit down now and figure out grand strategy about how to moderate what's going on.
You hit it on the head. There's no strategy. You know, it's almost like you break the huddle and the play's automatically going to Chucky, okay? He's going to get the ball, meaning he's going to get in front of that mic and denounce everything. It happens every time. Something of this nature happens. You know, you go back to DACA, everything. Chuck has the ball. There's no plan. Absolutely no. See, that's the problem right now, Joe, in my opinion, in this country. This is why we have such divide, because there's no agenda, zero agenda, as far as what the Democrats can bring to the table. It's unfortunate, but this is the problem, I think. And when you don't have a plan, you have a disaster. And that's what's happening right now on Capitol Hill these days. Nothing is getting done. It's all about blocking everything the GOP does. Everything that Donald Trump does, it's a block type thing. I'm tired of seeing him. Yep. I got to tell you, I am tired of seeing Chuck Schumer. I'll tell you that much. And, yeah, and listen, he's going to be there. He's going to be there a long time. We know it. It's not a plan.
Right. Resistance of a plan is no plan. And here, and I've been saying this for a while now, here the Dow is at about 25,000. Unemployment's low. Okay, it's going to be very hard going into a midterm saying that, you know, they need substantial change. So Dems should be huddling up very seriously now and trying to figure out what they're doing for these midterm elections, because I think they're in serious trouble right now. I think they're in serious trouble.
Joe Campbell with us off the record, on the record. You know, one thing regarding Kavanaugh and what's happening within the Supreme Court situation. You know, Joe, I've said this a long time. I don't think anybody's immune regarding limitations of term, including judges. You know, in my opinion, you know, the turnover is a good thing for America, for every facet of government, I believe, including judges. I'm sorry. I think sometimes it gets stale. They're on the bench and everything else. Listen, I know the Supreme Court is the highest of the land, but do we have to keep a guy 40 years? I mean, do we have to wait for a guy to retire before we get fresh blood in there? I mean, do you believe that there should be some sort of a term process of limitation involved in not only in judgeships but everywhere else? You know, we look at and see what's happening in the Senate and everything. And, you know, look at Chuck Schumer, for crying out loud. Well, he's been around 100 years, it seems. It just seems to me that turnover sometimes can be a very good thing. What's your point on that?
Yeah, and look, the founders and the Constitution is structured to try and keep federal judges in the United States Supreme Court outside of politics. You know, they deem them, over the years, they've been deemed the least dangerous branch because their whole job is to be making sure that the politicians are kept in check and that laws are in line with the Constitution. That's the idea behind it. And the theory for life tenure is, you know, If there were expiration dates set on judges, then politics would necessarily revolve around it. If they knew that at 80 judges had to retire, then all of a sudden politics would be coming around a mandatory retirement. So it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be a very random thing that happens when a judge dies or retires, and it's supposed to be that judges keep it very confidential and secret as to their retirement. What's interesting here is, Justice Kennedy, has made it very clear that he was looking to retire. And Kavanaugh and Gorsuch were both Kennedy clerks, and he was very, very fond of Kavanaugh. So it seems to me rather coincidental and, in quotes, suspicious that all of a sudden Kennedy, who's been the swing vote on all of these issues, is deciding to retire strategically at a moment where it's right before the midterm elections, where the Republicans could potentially lose the Senate, and strategically and coincidentally, his chief and primary confidant and law clerk, and Brett Kavanaugh, is the justice, is the judge that's being picked to replace him. I mean, the whole thing is politics, you know, at this point. So in theory, it's not supposed to work this way, but it's politics. And, you know, the Republicans have made it a priority, and I think Trump ran on this, and Mitch McConnell, you know, Mitch McConnell is a scary dude, man. He's a scary dude. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. He doesn't show a lot of cards. But he has been quietly packing the appellate courts with very conservative judges, and now he's going to have the ability and the opportunity to put two conservative justices on the United States Supreme Court. And they feel, you know, the Republican senators feel, at the end of the day, if Donald Trump only gets 4 years and they're able to put 40 conservative appellate young justices on the Circuit Court of Appeals and two conservative judges on the Supreme Court, that's a win. That's a win. The economy is doing great. They've gotten their conservative judges, and that's a win. And that's where I think, you know, with the shock that came with Donald Trump winning and his ability to dangle shiny objects and distract people with all these other issues, I think the priority was to stack these courts with conservative judges, which they've been able to do, and that's a scary thing. I mean, courts need to be moderate. They need to be able to look at both sides of an issue and find good solutions. Whenever you have any, and it doesn't matter whether it's many, many liberal justices or many, many conservative justices, whenever you have too many judges on one side of an issue, you're not going to get the right results. So I think the American people need to be looking at these judges and the Supreme Court very carefully at this point.
No, I agree. And, you know, listen, I still like my idea regarding limitations. I don't have a problem with it. I don't like the idea, well, you have one party can pick their side of judges, you know, four, and the other side can do what they want, you know, as far as four, and have that fifth in place. But in essence, I don't know if I like that idea. I think we're pandering a little too much to party divide here. We got to keep everybody happy in that regard. Let's not forget the Merrick Garland deal. I'll say it again from a couple of years ago. They had an opportunity there. Okay, but I don't like, you know, the fact. I mean, I heard it floated around a little bit, Joe, regarding, you know, listen, have Democrats, they can pick four. You know, I don't know if I like that idea. Okay, I think we're going against the grain a little bit there. I do like the term limitation a little bit better, getting some fresh blood in there. What about Democrats having their right to pick four from them, from that side of the column?
Yeah, I don't love that idea. I mean, I understand and certainly appreciate the idea of term limits. You know, the sense that, I mean, there are documented stories where, United States Supreme Court justices were in early stages of dementia. They were incontinent while on the bench. There are all sorts of stories about judges that have been left on the bench way too long beyond where they should have been left. But what I think we're seeing now, and we've seen this with David Souter, we see this with Kennedy, we saw it with Sandra Day O'Connor. I think judges in the modern era are beginning to realize that at some point they need to retire and get off the bench. I think if that trend continues and people, you know, and it's usually around 80 years old that you see these justices get off the bench, I think if that continues, we'll probably have, you know, an easier time swallowing it. If folks stay on the bench too long and start getting stale, then I think your idea is going to start growing some merit. It would take an amendment to the Constitution to do it, which is a very laborious process, but it can be done.
I think so. Then to me, it just makes the whole thing a little less divisive, as far as I'm concerned. Joe Campolo with us. We'll do another one before the break, and that was a very tough situation, Joe, for a couple of weeks over there in Thailand. This has been an incredible story on the world stage. And, you know, it's almost to me of miraculous proportions getting all 12 of those kids out of that cave plus the coach. All 12 are going to be fine, all doing well right now in the hospital, getting the nourishment and everything. But boy, I tell you, there were times when I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I expected to hear the worst. You know, we've seen deals in the past regarding people trapped in caves and whatnot. Boy, I tell you, years ago, the coal miners and everything. Tough situations existing in Thailand these days. But everybody kind of coming together. Even Mr. Musk from Tesla had an idea. You know, from the technological standpoint, trying to get these kids out in some sort of a tube-like container. It really kind of, to me, you know, with everything going around, you know, everything going on in a negative way, you know, how people came together here, the overlying thing here of people coming together and saving 13 humans from a disaster.
Yeah, I agree. I was so sickened at the thought of something terrible happening to those kids. It was just such a terrible situation, and I'm really happy and I'm really glad that they were all out. And I think the world is those things help unite the world. I am saddened, and my heart does go out to the family of the former Navy SEAL who died trying to rescue them. I think that is a terrible tragedy, and I think this coach who allowed them to get in that situation in the first place should have, you know, some sort of responsibility for this. The kids are kids. They're kids. They're not responsible for this. But this coach, I don't even understand how he allowed them to get into that situation. It really was just, you know, a terrible situation to begin with. I'm so happy that the kids are all safe. But, you know, shame on that coach for putting them in that situation in the first place. There were all sorts of warnings and information about what could happen there. They were ignored. And, you know, great outcome, just one tragedy that somebody lost their life trying to save these kids, which should not be forgotten in all of this.
100%. Two great points, Joe. Coach has to be cited here. What are you doing? You know, what are you leading these kids into that cave? I mean, I don't know what the judgment factor is in that. And, yes, that Navy SEAL who who really gave his life, you know, to find a way to rescue these kids.
Yeah, I mean, he was laying oxygen tanks on a path for them to get out, and he miscalculated how much air he had, and it's just absolutely tragic. Somebody selflessly gave their life to try and save those folks, and that's what should be remembered as well in all of this.
No question about it. Joe Campolo is with us. Joe, we're going to take a little bit of a break, come back. Still a lot more discussion coming up after these words. And we are back. We're talking with Joe Campolo, of course, managing partner of Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Joe, of course, with a blog, Off the Record. Incredible blog, really is. Brings that to life right here on the airwaves. We call that On the Record. Off the Record, On the Record. JNC, Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Joe, you know, the president in Brussels, day two, and who knows what Donald Trump has in store. Dumbfounded, plenty of diplomats, sharp rhetoric, outrageous claims day one. Main issues with NATO, I guess, the amount each country spends on defense, and really kind of hammering the allies with calls for all members of NATO to honor commitments to spend, 2% of their GDP. And then yesterday, Donald Trump said everyone should spend, 4%, which is a level even the U.S. doesn't meet. I mean, what do you think of the tactics as far as how Donald Trump is operating over there in Brussels with allies from way back? Who knows if they're present allies anymore?
Yeah, so like most things with Trump, you know, there's always a kernel of logic in what he's trying to accomplish, yet, you know, he seems to do it or try and find the most divisive way and use the most divisive rhetoric he can to accomplish that goal. That just might be who he is. I mean, it is a fair point. And look, this happens in all coalitions. It happens in all relationships. You know, people get used to other people giving certain resources. And over time, so I don't want to say they take it for granted, but over time, they just rely on it a little too heavily. And they devote their resources somewhere else because the United States has their back. And the United States, look, our economy has grown amazingly, amazingly well since World War II. We have had, you know, a very strong military presence over there in Europe as well as in Asia that has allowed those other countries to take their resources and devote them elsewhere and not into defense. And so, you know, it would seem like that's a reasonable conversation to have, to say, hey, you know, we need to level this out a little bit and everything else. But it's always so inflammatory and so accusatory and so harsh with him that it just, you know, it makes me cringe. It really makes me cringe. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, he does need to understand and respect that these are our friends and these are our allies. I don't think, particularly in the European countries he's talked to, but particularly in Europe, I don't think anybody in the leadership in Europe over the years has looked to take advantage of the United States. It's just conversations that need to be had and can and probably should be had by diplomats. But Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And, you know, we're just going to have to, and I hope world leaders just understand that's the way he is and move past it. But it is a reasonable conversation to have to talk about how to reallocate spend over there in Europe, being their economies are doing so much better now than they were at World War II. I mean, this whole thing, Jay, understand this whole process and NATO and the dollars that the United States are giving, Europe was decimated after World War II. National security over there was very, very tenuous, and so the United States has contributed a lot of time and dollars and troops to make sure they were safe while they were rebuilding their economy. So it's a fair point to say that, you know, they've rebuilt their economies. How are we going to reallocate it? And I think that's the underlying message that we should be looking at and just sort of ignore his nastiness.
Listen, the criticism of Germany, you know, calling a captive of Russia, calling some of this country's closest allies delinquent, you know, be careful. Listen, everybody needs a friend. I don't know who our friends are anymore. I'm going to be honest with you. In times of need, Joe, who do we turn to, you know, besides Israel? You know, we know Israel's always going to be backing us. I don't know anymore. You know, you're ticking off the Queen of England. That's a problem to me. You know, I mean, I don't even know, to be honest with you. You know, France, you know, where are we at with some of our friends here? We haven't seen a chaotic summit like this in the likes of which the West hasn't seen since. You know, I mean, I don't know. We saw the G7 in Canada, you know, with Trudeau. There's problems there. We know the tariffs and the wars are going back and forth. It just seems to me that I hope this president has a plan, because right now I don't know who we turn to in times of need.
Yeah, I suspect that he does not have a comprehensive plan. I mean, Donald Trump has built his empire in the construction industry, which he admittedly says is based on instinct. He sees a property, and his instinct was he could make it a great property and make money off the property. His whole plan is, you know, his instinct. And once again, he would have a much broader base of support if he just communicated and appeared to have a plan. I mean, I understand his point with Angela Merkel. On one hand, she's saying, you know, in the past that she's concerned with Russia and that Donald Trump and his relationship with Putin. And yet, you know, Germany is doing a joint venture with Russia to pipe gas into the country and all this other jazz that's going on. Those are fair points to bring up, and those are fair questions to have. I just think he could be so much more effective and get so many more people to understand the issue and support what he's saying if he just had a normal conversation about it and said just that. You know, I find it curious that Germany has been accusing us of being in bed with Russia, yet this is what's going on. Instead, he has to get so, I mean, NATO's in special session now because of the tone of the dialogue he had with Germany, and it's just, I don't understand this world of chaos, you know, but that's his style. That's the way he does it.
And two things, Joe, instinct and Russia. Instinct first. You know, be careful of instincts when you're going over to Singapore meeting with Kim, okay? You got to be careful because we have seen what has happened since that summit of June the 12th. You know, already, you know, kind of playing around with the nukes and all the ingredients of the weaponry that has been going on over there. You wonder what has been happening. What are the talks going on? Pompeo had to go, the Secretary of State had to go back there just last week. You know, North Korea accusing us of being gangster-like in this. You know, well, what are we looking at here? What was this agreement that was brought to everybody's attention and signed in Singapore back on June 12th? You know, what is going on? So we got to be careful. When you say your instincts tell you to go there and everything's going to be fine with Chairman Kim, let's be careful here. Cautious optimism beyond right now. I mean, we can't trust anybody regarding this whole deal, especially Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. A couple of positives, though, to stay focused on. You know, Donald Trump did what Donald Trump had to do, what the president had to do, and that is, he went over, he shook hands, they put down on paper what they put it down on paper, and now Donald Trump is, you know, relegating the negotiation of it to Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State. You know, it's a good thing. In my opinion, it's a very good thing that Rex Tillerson was replaced by Mike Pompeo simply because of this negotiation. I mean, the Secretary of State here, Secretary Pompeo, is a former director of the CIA. You know, he's got a lot of intelligence. He's got a lot of information up his sleeve, and he's no fool. So I don't think he's going to let North Korea pull the wool over his eyes. Donald Trump, who's impulsive and distracted and instinctual, could not be heading up and leading these negotiations. And I'm glad that never came up. If you remember back, you know, when Jimmy Carter was president and he had the Camp David peace talks, he spent 13 days with Middle Eastern leaders, himself personally, trying to negotiate that peace accord there. I'm glad that Trump has relegated it to it. You know, Kim Jong-un is a bad guy. He's a really, really bad guy, and he can't be trusted at his word. He signed a piece of paper. That's great. We're going to use it politically, I hope, and diplomatically to hold his feet to the fire, but he can't be trusted. If you remember, even in the beginning, before the summit, he went crying to China and came back and called off the talks and then came back to the table and brought it on. So I think we have to expect and understand that he's a petulant child and he's going to negotiate this way and he's going to cry and he's going to do whatever. We have to remain very, very consistent and very, very forceful. I think we also have to understand that it's going to take a lot longer than anticipation and expectation. I mean, these things are very complicated, and they're going to take a long time. I mean, this is what England is looking at with Brexit right now. You know, they in 2016 they had basically a referendum saying, you know, Brexit, we want to exit from the EU, and here we have now total chaos over in England because it's very complicated issues. It's not just dollars and cents at stake, it's human lives, and that's the same thing going on in North Korea. So I'm hopeful that the full diplomatic corps headed by Mike Pompeo is being very careful and serious, but I think that they are.
And by the way, could you have even more of a cold-looking optic over there yesterday? You know, the class photo taken with all the leaders in Brussels, and how about Theresa May? You know, and she didn't want any part of President Trump. I'll tell you that much, especially when you have Trump kind of standing there looking around, dapper, fixing the tie, the cuffs and everything else. No one's talking to him. Everybody's congregating with one another. And all of a sudden, he goes over to May, and, you know, Theresa May didn't want any part of Donald Trump. That gives you an idea of what's happening right now in the U.K. and the U.S. A lot of divide and everything else, a lot on the mind of Theresa May these days, as you say, Joe, with the exiting of the Union. No question about it.
Yeah, and as silly as it sounds, Jay, had England won that soccer match against Croatia, the mood in that country would have totally turned around. I'm telling you, we saw it after 9/11 when Mike Piazza hit that home run. I mean, sports have an amazing way of doing it, and so many levels I was rooting for England to win that soccer match just to relieve some tension over there in the country. England's got a lot of tension going on right now. It really does.
That is excellent point. I heard so many Brits yesterday just ear to ear with the smiles before that game, looking so forward to that. Oh man, what a kick in the behind that was. There's no doubt about it. That would have been the magic elixir as far as medication. There's no doubt about
Absolutely.
It. England-France would have been incredible. All right, and I'll tell you one thing. And the other point I wanted to make regarding Russia, now the big meeting Monday, Finland, Putin and Trump, you know, listen, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear rainbows and gummy bears here. All right? Listen, you got to slap the guy in the wrist a little bit. We know he meddled. We know Putin and company meddled, Joe, and there's got to be some discussion about that. I don't want to hear the president, you know, the smile stroking and everything else here. Stop already. You know, it's time Putin gets his a little bit, his just desserts here. I want to see a little bit of firmness on the point of Donald Trump here. None of this nonsense. We know they meddled 2016 in the election. We know it already. Confirmed. Now it's time to come down on him a little bit. I don't want to hear the fact Putin had nothing to do with it. We know he did.
Yeah, Jay, I totally agree with that, right? It's in our national security that we can't have ostensibly foreign countries overtly meddling in our elections. But I will remind you and everyone that we meddle in everybody's elections. Okay, if we feel that there are candidates that are not appropriate by our standards, we meddle all the time. We'll fund candidates in other countries. We do a lot of things out there, so we have to just be very careful. I understand it's a political position. I understand that we need to make sure that our voting booths and our elections are kept, you know, free from any sort of manipulation or anything else. But we don't really have clean hands here in the United States. We meddle in everybody else's elections to a certain extent. So I totally agree. I don't think that Vladimir Putin's a good guy. I think Donald Trump, just for optics and just for world optics, needs to come down hard on him. But the practicalities of it are this whole meddling issue is somewhat of a red herring because we've been doing it for years and years and years and years, and we'll continue to do it going forward.
I know what you're saying, but to me, you know, Putin's right there on the Kim pedestal. You know, he might get a little more of a spotlight on him, no question about it. We know the world power, and we know the invisibility and everything else. But to me, you know, it doesn't change the course as far as
I totally agree. I totally agree. I don't like the guy. I think he's a bad guy. He's a dictator, and I think we need to slap him down. But I think there are tons of other reasons we can be slapping down Vladimir Putin. And in addition to the fact that they meddled in the in the election. But I think that if we use that as all, our primary and only reason, it's going to come back to bite us.
And I think what's coming back to bite us already is this whole immigration thing, Joe. You know, more asylum seekers turned away at the border under the new policy. You know, the claims based on fears of gang or domestic violence immediately to be rejected, according to new guidance given to officers now interview some of these seekers at some of the borders and evaluate these applications. And, you know, let's face it, right now, you know, we have seen a disaster in this. You know, the reunification of all these kids younger than five with their parents, hopefully completed today. The government, though, is still facing another one of these deadlines. I think it's July 26th now to reunite thousands of older kids with their parents. You know, I mean, listen, to me, you know, the process of thinking was in line. There has to be something here as far as shoring up the borders. We can't let everybody in, folks. We can't. But when you're separating families, that's a touchy subject. It really is. You know, the problem, Joe, a lot of these kids are coming through not with their parents, with other individuals who have other things on their mind as far as, you know, negativity is concerned in this country. And that's something, you know, you have to vet. You know, you can't, this 20-day rule, you know, to me is thrown out the window. It takes a lot longer than 20 days, in my opinion, to match DNA and everything else to make sure things are on a level playing field here. But it's been a complete disaster. The courts don't know what to do with this stuff anymore. And this has been like a game of dominoes since way back. And all because of this wall, the funding of the wall and everything else. And look what's happened since.
It's a worldwide crisis right now in terms of immigration and what to do with it. And again, looking at what England's going through in Brexit, one of the biggest reasons why voters voted for Britain to exit the EU was because of the EU's policy of open access and being able to cross borders. And they didn't want that anymore. They wanted to have an immigration policy and close down their borders again. And you look at the United States, and it's a terribly complicated, challenging problem. We are a country of immigrants. You know, our whole country has been built on immigration. And now that we're all here, you know, we feel we're entitled to have some right to be here, and others can't get in, and there needs to be a policy, and it's terribly, terribly complicated and horrible. It's just a horrible situation, you know. And again, the families being separated and children being separated is terrible. It breaks my heart. It broke my heart to see the pictures, as I'm sure it did you, and the kids crying. But you know, once again, America is not consistent on its positions. You know, we do not take a consistent position with regards to our kids. You know, our own, you know, juvenile system, our own criminal system, our own foster care system, our own, you know, poverty, nutrition system are all skewed against kids. You know, kids are separated from their parents all the time in this country, and they're put into foster care where they're abused, and they're, you know, one in ten children in this country go hungry, and all of these issues exist. And I'm very happy to see that immigration has brought this issue of not separating children from their family to the forefront. But we got a lot of other problems here to fix when it comes to, you know, when it comes to children. The proliferation of child pornography on the internet and child trafficking and all the issues that go on here, you know, these are real issues that just don't get people marching in the streets every day, all day. And I'd love to see this as a spark to try and fix the problem that kids face here in our country every day. It's a tragedy, our inconsistent policies as it comes down to children. So I don't believe that children should be separated from their families. I do believe we need an immigration policy. But one thing I know for sure is that children who are American citizens, who have rights here under our Constitution, need to be valued. And we need to start fixing these other processes as well, because we're incredibly inconsistent with our regard for how we treat our children.
I agree with you, but I got to tell you, when it comes to inconsistency, it's all about the Unaccompanied Minors Act. I mean, let's face it, we don't know which way is up regarding this piece of legislation. We can't have kids come into this country solo and get stopped, told to come back for a court date, and they never show up, and they end up in the gangs. Thus, what you're seeing as far as MS-13 these days. You know, this whole thing could have been averted way back. The Unaccompanied Minors Act has been a disaster, an absolute disaster. And until we fortify a solid piece of legislation, it's never gonna improve. To me, unaccompanied minors fixed way back in time, you wouldn't have had most of the problems what we're experiencing today.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think you know, almost every elected official on both sides, even if they won't publicly admit it, agree with that position, Jay. I think it was a terrible, terrible position for us to take. I think we left these kids with no guidance, no support, and that's why I'm saying even the infrastructure to support children and foster care and all these other things, we gave them no resources, and so they gravitated towards gangs and completely lost an opportunity for a good life. It's just such a tragedy. It breaks my heart. It really does.
No doubt. Listen, before we get to some CMM stuff, you know, I got to tell you, this Papa John's, you know, he got his up and comings here. You know, listen, found their public face out, rightfully so. This John Schnatter resigning as chairman of this pizza company, word got out that he used the N-word during a conference call, admitted he used the word while participating in some sort of a role-playing exercise designed to prevent, public relations crisis. He apologized. I get it. Listen, you know, I don't care who you are, what company you represent. You know, no place in our society racism. I don't care role-playing or anything else. You know, I had enough of Papa John in the NFL. Every other commercial is a Papa John commercial. You know, I've had their pizza once. It's disgusting to begin with. I'll tell you that much. So, you know what? Fitting that this guy is out the door. I mean, you know, think before you speak, okay? Please. Enough of that. Think about Peyton Manning and the partnership he went through. He even got out of this company from where he's tired of it. You know what? I don't want to hear about Papa John anymore.
Yeah, I have no idea what this guy was thinking. It's absolutely stupid and disgusting. I mean, apparently he was like pretending he was Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I can't even understand at all what people are thinking when they're in these positions. But I think sometimes these people, because they become so amazingly wealthy and they get their butts kissed everywhere they go, and they think they're invincible and can say and do anything. It's unbelievable to me. It's absolutely unbelievable to me. I mean, I think that was the dynamic that drove me too. That's this idiot's dynamic, and you know, I hope he gets really whacked for it. I mean, resignation is not enough. I really hope he gets whacked for it, because he's just a stupid, despicable person for doing that.
And listen, the NFL is going to get more time from me in from the visual end of things. I'll be watching a little bit more, because I don't have to watch Papa John now on every break. You know, of commercials. You know, that's enough. I don't want to see Papa John anymore. All right, let's get to CMM Live. You got some great. I tell you, Joe, that's really it's coming into its own here, huh?
We're trying, man. We're trying. You know, you're my inspiration, so I'm trying.
I mean, the only thing is, you haven't had me on.
Well, anytime. You have an open invite, man. Anytime.
Thank you, but you've had some good guests there. I mean, really, you know, Amanda Talti's been on. From the Tourette Association of America, you've had some Family Service League, Karen Borstein. I mean, you've had some good ones. You got a couple of good ones coming into play here. That's on the 17th, Karen. And Amanda's actually, Amanda Talti of the Tourette's Association of America, that's coming into play. So you got a lot of good guests coming up.
We do. What we try to do is once a quarter, we try to spotlight some of the more, prominent leaders that are running not-for-profits. I mean, one of the things, Jay, and you and I have talked about this a lot, I mean, the not-for-profit business on Long Island especially is an amazing multi-billion-dollar business, and these professionals that are running it, I truly admire them because, you know, they are people that could be in the for-profit world making, you know, three or four times what they make running a not-for-profit, but they're so committed to their causes that they choose to stay in the not-for-profit world and make less. And I'm fascinated by it. So spending time with them and talking to them and understanding, not just their philosophy, but their business acumen. They run amazing organizations and they do amazing work. And these are people that, you know, Amanda Talti, she was you know, the vice president of advancement, and when the spot for CEO opened up, the board jumped all over it because he's an amazing, dynamic leader who knows how to run a national organization at this point, and it's incredible. And these are incredibly talented people here on Long Island that we want to make sure get their just due. There's so much negativity. There's so much terrible news out there. We're just trying to put a little sliver of hope into everybody as we do this.
It's good stuff. Look out for CMM Live, 11:30 a.m. You can follow it on Facebook at CMMLLP, and you can watch live. And you can also, by the way, submit questions. Very key there. So that's good stuff. Joe, I tell you, fun hour. Really was. And we didn't even cover Starbucks with that nonsense, you know, trying to cover up their own faux pas internally.
That's
you're gonna ban plastic straws and throw a fine? How about that? Seattle, first major city to ban the straws. And now Starbucks planning on phasing out the straws. How about that?
Yep.
Trying to get to everybody's good graces there for their own faux pas, by the way. Unbelievable. That's a whole nother set of encyclopedias we'll discuss next time. Hey, great stuff. I'll see you on the link soon. I'm getting hot. Be careful. Be careful, Joe.
Yep. I'm ready to play, man, anytime. I'm ready to play with you, brother. You let me know.
I am ready. Firing off a couple of good rounds the other day. Hey, great stuff. I'll talk soon.
All right, Jake. Be well. Thanks.